Hi, everybody. I'm Diane Canada, and we are live. Hope your Thursday is going well. We have been working on our series this week, Wicked Witches of the South. Key takeaways this week so far have been that conservative women can come across as stern, lacking compassion, lacking empathy. Because we're the tough love party, we believe in equal opportunity, not necessarily equal outcome. That can be perceived as cold or indifferent towards those less fortunate. Another takeaway this week is that even though nothing could be further from the truth, we do have empathy and compassion, great compassion, but our current brand has to change. We need a makeover when it comes to the conservative brand, meaning how other people perceive us. We talked about how our heart should be to simply plant seeds of truth and curiosity in the world when we're talking with our neighbors and friends that are on the far left or even in the middle. But we have to allow God then to do his part in watering those seeds. That's not our job. It took a long time to build this political climate of division, and it's going to take a minute to turn it around. Trains don't turn on a dime. So we need to move out of the spirit of desperation and into the spirit of inspiration. We need to know our audience. In other words, we need to understand the people that we're trying to reach in our communities on a deeper level. We need to listen to them and allow them to ask us the hard questions. We need to be willing to engage in those hard questions, not get defensive, rather than an I'm right and you're wrong and us getting all flustered. Instead, we need to be able to back our positions up. So what do those conversations actually sound like? How can we back them up? By saying something that will inspire someone to our conservative views, plant a seed of truth and curiosity in them rather than desperately trying to win the battle. Because if we stick to that plan, we're going to end up losing the cultural war. And that's what we can't afford. So today we are going to cover a lot in this area. We're going to try and unpack a lot in 30 minutes. And I'm hoping, we're going to get to most of it. Let me go ahead and bring in my friends and let's dig right into the topic. I'm going to bring in first my friend Patty Possel. She also ran for the Tennessee State House of Representatives in the last election, like I did. She covered the Memphis area. I was covering the Nashville area. And we also served together in the Nashville Republican Women's Club. So please welcome in Patty Possel. Hi, Patty.
Hi. Thanks for having me today.
Yes. Welcome back. Welcome back. And I'm also excited to introduce you guys today to my good friend, Stephen Skelton. Stephen is heading up. He actually founded the American Bible Project, which I'm very proud to be a founding member of and serving on the board with him. He's putting the American Bible, the original American Bible, back in schools all across our country. So I hope we'll get to share a little bit with you about that. But please welcome in my friend, Stephen Skelton. Hi, Stephen.
Hello. Hi, Diane. Thanks for having me.
Hey, welcome. Welcome. Glad to have you with us today. All right, guys. I think it's first really important to, y'all, I'm sorry. I'm so distracted right now. I'm getting a very terrorist attack here, literally a terrorist attack. This is what happens when you try to do a faith-based show. Wow. Okay. I hope that's a good thing. Anyway, it just distracted me. It popped up in my newsfeed. All right. So first we need to be reminded of how we are perceived. Okay. And we talked about this in previous shows this week, but I want us to really get, even though this might be painful, for us to really get a good view of how the new generation perceives conservatives. All right. This is what they think of us. And this was done by a poll through a study done through University of Chicago, I think it was. They think that we are intolerant. They think that we reject science. And they think that we disregard the poor. That's what they think of us. All right. So that's our uphill battle. So if that's how they perceive us, I say we address each one of these three things today and give us some good food for thought so that we can start crafting some messaging that's going to speak directly to those perceptions. All right. So I wanted to first talk today, guys, about the intolerance. What exactly do they think we are intolerant of? And so I'm just going to throw that out to you guys. Stephen, come on in on this first, if you will. And let's kind of build this out. I have my ideas. I think that they think we're intolerant, you know, for gay rights and, you know, transgender, things like that. What else can you think of that they think we're intolerant of?
I think probably the maybe the three big things that they perceive us as being intolerant of are what they message as women's rights, as the voice of African Americans, and then also the voice of gay rights. That is their messaging, that that those are the things that we're intolerant of, because as Christian conservatives and Christian conservatives in particular, we do take a traditional stand on some of the issues that that they would like to see us offering, what they would call a bit more of an olive branch, a bit more of a seeking of common ground. I actually think that that's part of the methodology we do need to change, is that we should be seeking more of a common ground with these people. Even as we maintain our principles, as we maintain our stance, there's nothing wrong with finding out the issues that they are interested in and seeking to meet them at a point of common interest.
Yeah,
that is the only way for a conversation to begin. Otherwise, we're simply screaming back and forth at each other.
Yeah, yeah. And you're so right about that. And we talked about this week, that we really need to be willing to listen as much as we're talking, you know. And Patty, how about you? What are some things that come to mind for you? Kind of these same things, or is there anything you want to add to that?
No, definitely the same things, especially on women's rights and control of one's own body. Mm-hmm. That seems to be where we're most intolerant, right? And really, not just on abortion, but also on birth control in general. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. Yeah. I think you're right. All right, guys. So let's start giving people some food for thought on this. All right. So I think also they think that we're intolerant in our, when it comes to our faith. I think our faith is really under attack right now in America. The fact that whether or not we were built on Christian principles. And I think because Christians have, you know, we've seen a lot of, you know, very famous Christians fall from grace, right? And so, and people have had bad experiences in church and what have you. So they think that, I think that they think that our Christian values are wobbly, that maybe they don't have merit anymore because of all of these very public falls from grace. And so the first thing I want to do is talk about, okay, if all these things we're talking about, if we're talking about gay rights, if we're talking about the family nucleus, we're talking about abortion, all these things that they're seeing as we're being intolerant on. Is it intolerance, or is it just that we're standing on our convictions of our Christian beliefs? And can we back that up, that our nation was founded on these? So Stephen, you are the best one that I think you can kick this conversation off. You are the best one to speak to this because you are out there fighting this fight every day right now. Yeah. So please share your thoughts on this.
Absolutely, Diane. I think that there is a there's a messaging issue that's happening on both sides of the equation. They're doing it much better than we are. If we look at some of the major groups that we might disagree with, such as Planned Parenthood, well, Planned Parenthood's message is that they speak for women. And society, everyone from the people to the politicians, we'll look at that messaging and they'll say, yes, you know what? We should be supporting a group that speaks for women. Planned Parenthood's message is, not their mission, not their method, but their message is that they speak for women. And so we should support that because that's a worthy cause. Well, Black Lives Matter says we speak for African Americans. That, again, that's a worthy cause. Not talking about their method, not talking about their mission, talking about their message. The message is that we speak for African Americans, and peoples and politicians alike look at that and they say, yes, that's also a group that we should be supporting. We should allow Planned Parenthood a place at the table. We should allow Black Lives Matter a place at the table. And then they look at us. They look at conservatives, and in particular conservative Christians, and they say, well, who do you speak for? Why do you deserve a place at the table? And we say, well, we speak for the founders. And they say, what do you mean you speak for the founders? Well, we speak for the founders in as far as they incorporated faith as the foundation of their governments. Yeah. Of course, today we all believe that laws should be based on morality, that they're all meant to help people. But what we're talking about is a morality based on the Judeo-Christian ethic. And so we say, we speak for the founders in as far as they incorporated faith in their governance. And someone says, well, that's not true, or how can you prove that? And to that, as you know, Diane, I introduced them to the idea of the first American Bible,
which is
the only Bible approved by our government. It's the only Bible recommended to Americans by our founders, and it became what historians call the Bible of the American Revolution. In fact, I have my copy right here, which says the first American Bible on it. And the three things that it is, again, the only Bible approved by Congress, the only Bible recommended to Americans, and the Bible of the American Revolution, which, as you know, Diane, in a very short summary, when the American Revolution began, the foundation of our nation, America stopped trade with Britain. When we stopped trade with Britain, we cut off our supply of Bibles, because Britain is where we got our Bibles from. It was the King James Version of the Bible, and we had cut off our supply of it. So a man named Robert Aitken, who was a printer for the Journals of Congress, wrote a letter to our founders in government, and he said, I would like your approval to publish the first American Bible. Mm-hmm. And our founders wrote back a reply, which became a resolution that's recorded in the Journals of Congress for September 12, 1782. And they said two things. Neither one of them was anything about a separation of church and state, by the way. First thing they said was, Mr. Aitken, the United States Congress gives you the approval to publish the first American Bible. This will be the first King James Bible made in America by Americans for Americans. And the second thing they said, which was really an extra step, they said, and we recommend that all Americans read this Bible. Mm-hmm. So that there, I think, is the hold it in your hand proof that America was founded as a Christian nation, to the exclusion of anyone, not to the exclusion of anyone, I'll repeat, but rather that we are a country that was founded by Christians and for Christians. Mm-hmm. Simply as a matter of history, the majority of the founders were Christian, the majority of the people of the country were Christian, and to the exclusion of no one, but that is what I say is the key evidence for our Christian foundation in America.
Yeah, and I love that because, you know, Michael, Stephen, when you're talking about that, what comes to my mind is if the Bible, the Judeo-Christian Bible that we were founded on, if that's not our gauge for right or wrong in America, what is? Because if we're looking at all of these, you know, if we're looking at a moral society and we know that separation of church and state did not mean separation of faith from life, you know, and our founding father said it over and over and over again in quotes that the only way that our government is going to sustain is if our country remains moral and religious. So that, I mean, that's a fact. We have Christians who fall from grace. Okay. We are human beings. We have a sin nature. We are in a fallen world. People are going to fall away, but those values remain. Those values are the rock. So I would ask you, Patty, you know, if the Bible is not the gauge between what's right or wrong, what is? You know, what is?
Well, for me, it is the gauge, right? So that is where I personally draw strength and wisdom and guidance and the whole shebang. And maybe a little bit about what we can do as leaders in the community is to make sure that when we're out and about, that we try to do our very best. Again, not to say that we can't fall. We are all sinners, and we're all, you know, that is our part of our beings when we're born, right? So we can't overcome that, but we can try really, really hard. And even those who don't have faith doesn't mean that they can't have moral foundation, right? Because we're also born with that. So to help people and guide people and live by example would probably be our best way to go.
Yeah, and being willing to admit, you know, I think this is another thing, ladies, that all of you who are watching today, you know, I'm hoping that this will be some good, you know, this will be good evidence, like we're talking about, that we were founded on Christian principles, but that we have to be willing to be humble. And when we mess up, to take ownership of it and say, we're not saying that we are perfect people, not by any stretch. And we're not saying we have arrived or that we've got it all figured out. We're just going back to the Bible as our gauge between what's right and wrong. So when we look at, you know, gay rights and transgender issues, okay, that's a very hot topic. And sometimes some people might be afraid to talk about it on the air. I'm not. Okay, so here's how I feel about it. I believe that, I mean, I have a lot of gay friends, okay, and that I dearly love. And many of them are very, you know, very open about the fact that they are believers. They are Christian believers. So what I believe personally is that God intended for families, the nucleus of a family, to be one man and one woman in marriage. And that, and there were reasons for that, right? Number one, procreation. Obviously, that's, you know, that's kind of how we, you know, survive as a species. But I also think that it's designed that way because children benefit most, and I think they have the best chance for a happy life if they've got the influence of a mother who's more nurturing and all of that, and then they have the influence of a father who is teaching them how to provide, teaching us how to and model how to provide and protect and all of these things in the family and all of the different dynamics that those two genders give us. I think it makes for well-rounded adults. Now, I'm speaking as someone who came from a family where my dad was a pastor, all right, and at when I was 8 years old, decided that he wanted to go play house with some other family and left my mom and my sister and I high and dry. No child support, nothing, just left us. Now, you would think that if anybody would have turned their back on Christianity, it would have been me. You know, here my dad's a pastor and he abandons us, you know, and it took me years to understand who I was and my value and figure life out. I mean, a lot of therapy and a lot of leaning on my faith. So I'm not saying that people can't go on and have successful lives, Stephen. I'm just saying that I think God's ideal is one man, one woman raising their families together. We see this in the inner cities all the time. A lot of these social policies that they're talking about when they say we disregard the poor, a lot of these social policies that came into place in 70s, 80s, 90s, where it almost incentivized women to have the dads not be a part of the kids' lives because they got more money for each child that they had with no dad in the house. You know, so speak to that for just a minute. What comes to mind for you, Stephen, when I talk about that?
I want to remind all my brothers and sisters that it's a Bible, not a blackjack. We all know that a blackjack is a weapon that is used to bludgeon others, and that is not the intention of this book, which tells us to love others as we love ourselves.
That's right.
When I was talking before about the need to reach out to people to find a common ground, well, care and concern for their well-being is certainly a common ground that we would find with anyone. And I would like to just encourage people that we not demonize the other, that we not look to use that Bible as a blackjack, that we not use it to strike, but rather to help. Yes. That it's a healing book. It's not a hurting book. And that's part of the messaging that we need to continue to consistently be about putting out into the culture, is that first and foremost, we're here to help.
Yeah,
I'm reminded of someone who had once said that, well, you would grab a child's hand that was about to touch a hot stove to keep them from harming themselves. And then someone else said, yes, but when you reach to snatch that child's hand, that child knows first and foremost that you're acting out of love, that you're not acting to hurt them. And the reason that child knows that you're acting out of love is because that's been the first message that you communicated to them, was one of care and concern as opposed to correction. Well, if we could all communicate first care and concern to anyone that's on the other side of the fence to us, just possibly they'll be more open to the correction that may follow.
That's such a good point. We've got to lead with love and compassion. And we've been talking about that all week long, that nobody's going to want to they're not going to care about anything you have to say if they don't feel like you care about them. And I want to just, you know, I have this in my file over here, and I just want to pull it up for a second and remind us of this, that in the Bible, in 1 Corinthians, It says, love is patient, kind, not envious, doesn't boast, it's not proud, it doesn't dishonor others, it's not self-seeking, not easily angered, keeps no record of wrongs, does not delight in evil, but rejoices in truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, and always perseveres. It never fails. I mean, that is the story of the Bible. That is what we're hoping to arm you with, is not only the right words to say or the right approach to conversations, but the right heart in which to share them with. So, Patty, come on this. I see you shaking your head there. I think you have some thoughts rolling around.
Yeah. So my mind keeps swirling around. We can sit and talk all day long about all these kinds of things, but what are we doing as Christians, as moral leaders? Because everybody who's tuning into this is going to be some kind of leader, or they want to be more involved. So if you want to be more involved, how can we get out there and actually get this message without the big commercialism, where it may come across as, oh, that's just a political ad of some sort or another, but actually meet the people where they are and move forward. So I love what both of you all have said, but we have to turn the words into actions.
Mm-hmm. And inspire, you know, and again, I keep coming back to this because a lot of people are in desperation mode right now. I was on a call this morning and there was a historian on the call who brought up such a great point, you know, that so many people feel like with the turn of the election, you know, with whatever side you were on with that, you know, when we woke up to a Biden presidency, my phone started blowing up from women who absolutely went into panic mode, you know, panic mode for their children. Now, we have seen a lot of very unhealthy policies passed since he's been in office. And I'm not trying to downplay those. They are serious and they are rattling our country to the core. Okay. But we're not going to be effective if we're operating from a place of desperation. We have to get control of ourselves and remember who the one who really is in control. And we have to tap into his wisdom and his power and speak from a place of inspiration, not desperation. And, you know, I would love for you, you know, Stephen, to speak a little bit more on this, because history repeats itself, right? We things are so cyclical. One of my friends said the other day that every 100 years we have another Hitler. Every 100 years we have another flu. You know, there's everything kind of comes back around, doesn't it, Stephen? I mean, don't you think?
Sure. Since the fall of man, we've been in a continual cycle of failing. I don't see much evidence we're going to break that cycle before Jesus comes back. Perhaps we'll keep on in that cycle, but it does not mean that even as the darkness increases, that the light will not increase. In fact, the light can increase. I think that we are fortunate in being Christian conservatives that we have a couple of major bodies that convene on a weekly or monthly basis. In churches we convene, in Sunday school classes we convene, in political parties we convene as well. What that gives us is an opportunity to activate. What I mean is to actually do things in the community, which is mm-hmm. to say that you can organize with your church a certain outreach to a certain group. That would be a good thing. You can do the same thing within your political body, organize an outreach to a group. And when I talk about outreach, I am talking about putting the first foot forward. Maybe the first foot is an open hand. The first foot is something that seeks to help, is what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Something that operates with the desire to reach out to others with an open hand, not a clenched fist, but an open hand, mm-hmm. that seeks a handshake, that seeks to find a commonality, and that seeks mm-hmm. to build a relationship based upon that commonality. We're all human folks on both sides of the aisle. We're all just people. But the mistake that we made is in pointing to other people as the other in a way that we can't bridge the separation between us. That's not true. It's a lie not only of the enemy, it's also a lie of the media, that we have these separations that are insurmountable, that we cannot come together. When in fact, that flies in the face of the Christian message, which mm-hmm. is that God so profoundly believes that we can come together that he became one of us. You don't get much more different than man and God. And I say man as in man, men and women. But you don't get much more different. You don't get many more inseparable chasms between two entities than God and man. And yet God became man in the person of Christ when he came down to earth. That to me is the surest sign that we also should be doing likewise in terms of looking for common ground, for commonality, and approaching that with an open hand to build a relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're so right. You know, on this topic of us rejecting science or disregarding the poor, even if we look at those in the context of what we've been talking about today, you know, when we're talking about the abortion issue, you know, like you were saying, they have sympathetic messaging, you know, we care about women's rights. Well, okay, here's, you know, maybe here's some food for thought on that. Try telling a story. I talked about this earlier this week. First of all, the Abby Johnson story, if you haven't heard about it, I highly recommend that you go look it up. There's a movie out called Unplanned, and you can simply tell that story that, you know, she was the Planned Parenthood's top producer, if you want to call it that, which is so insidious to me to call it that. But in the context of what we're talking about, she could not have been more pro-choice. And one day they were shorthanded. She got pulled back into the clinic to actually assist the doctor in the procedure. And she looked through the ultrasound, I think it was, and she could see the baby fighting for its life. And that completely, she did a 360. And now she is one of the strongest pro-life advocates because she saw that it was not just a clump of cells, that this was actually a being fighting to stay alive. And so you can just tell a story like that. When it comes to, also when it comes to abortion, we can go back to our biblical principles and we can pull the scripture that says God knitted us together in our mother's womb. He had a purpose and a plan for us before we were even born. You know, so these are things that are biblical that you can pull from. You know, but when it comes to disregarding the poor, I want to touch on that for just a minute, you guys. So I think that a lot of Democrats, a lot of liberal progressives feel like capitalism is such an ugly thing because we are greedy. You know, we're only in it for the rich. I mean, I hear this all the time that all we care about is the rich getting richer and the poor getting poorer. But when government stays out of it, the people who end up, you know, gaining incredible wealth in our country are the strongest philanthropists. And I just want to point, not all of them maybe, but a large majority of them. And I just wanted to point to one in Andrew Carnegie. I have a list here of the things that Andrew Carnegie was the richest man in the world. He had humble beginnings, came here from Scotland on a boat, very poor. But because of the free market society here, because of a free America, he was able to build a steel company and become the wealthiest man in the world. And here's what, just a small list of his philanthropic legacy. All right. He built, let's see, let me get to my point. Okay. He built public libraries, museums. He put organs in thousands of churches. He built colleges, built schools. His fortune supported the discovery of insulin. He was the founder. They created the Pell Grants. This was one I found interesting. They created Sesame Street, you know, his fortune, he went on to create Sesame Street, which is still on the air to this day. But this was a quote from him: to try to make the world in some way better than you found it is to have a noble motive in life. So it is not the party of greed. It is not the party of, you know, I'm going to get mine and I don't care about the poor. So I'm going to give you guys just a last couple of minutes here for some parting thoughts as we start to wrap up today. What are your thoughts? Do you feel like, Stephen, that in a society where people are left to, you know, give out of their own heart and of their own free will, that that's better than being forced, socialism, things like that, being forced to distribute wealth?
Well, the willing heart is always better than the forced hand. Mm-hmm. And it is one of the tenets of the Christian faith to be a joyful giver. We should consider that when we talk about forces for good in the society. If one of the fundamental beliefs of any belief system is to put others before yourself, is to be a joyful giver, well, those sound like two pretty good things to me. Might be that we should build a society based on that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so good. So good. How about you, Patty? What comes to mind for you? Last thoughts today?
right away, it goes back to something we touched on yesterday, and that is, if socialism works so well, why is immigration so far out of control to the point where people knowingly break our laws, our immigration laws, to take a chance to get in to a capitalistic society? Mm-hmm. So why would we ever want to go to a socialistic economy when it has failed all around the world, and that capitalism is the land of opportunity, and the United States has this plan. This is the land of opportunity. So a little hard work, a little sweat, you can make your life into whatever you want it to be, but you've got to, you know, be educated in whatever it is and develop your talents, put some sweat equity in, because I guarantee you, Andrew Carnegie didn't work 8 to 5, an hour and a half lunch.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, he did not build that steel company by not taking risks and only giving the minimum, which is really what socialism is, right? Minimum amount of effort to get minimum in return.
Yeah.
Capitalism, more effort, more in return. Mm-hmm. And the more you give, the better off everybody is.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great. Such great wisdom that you both brought to the show today. I really appreciate you, Stephen, and thank you, Patty, for being with me today. You know, as you guys, as we wrap up today, we're going to say a prayer over you, but please take, you know, go back and rewatch these messages from earlier this week and, you know, design a little journal or something that where you can pull from these little nuggets of wisdom in your conversations, you know, practice them, embed them in your, you know, role play, do whatever you can to start practicing these things. And then that way, when you're out in the world and you're talking with people, you can pull them up quickly, you know, and you're not having to kind of root around in your mind trying to find them. Because this is some great, these are just great, how can I say it? Like, these will help you. These will help back your arguments up. But it's not so much about proving that you're right as much as it is inspiring other people and giving them seeds of wisdom that are going to be watered again by God. And we hope over time, if we get enough people doing this, then we can start to turn this cultural train back to conservative values. Because that is, it is the court of public opinion at this point. All the legislation in the world, you know, is not going to help. What's going to help is you, the person, the citizen in America that is opening your mouth, no longer being silent, but doing it from a place of love and a place of wisdom and a place of proof, okay, and inspiration. All right, so let's pray over you guys today, and before we send you out, and again, we appreciate you watching always. Father, I pray over every person under the sound of my voice right now. I pray, Lord, that you would bless them and that you would calm their hearts, especially those that feel a sense of urgency or desperation in our country right now. Lord, please relieve that and instead replace it with a hope. Let us always be prisoners of hope in you, Lord, and give them the right words in those conversations at the right moment. Help them to recall the things that they're learning and even things that you're going to bring to them in your own wisdom into their hearts. And Lord, I pray that little by little, we will turn this country around, that we will win hearts and minds back to you, Lord, and that things would start to ease in our city streets and in our neighborhoods and in our homes. We love you, and we just praise you, Lord, that you're healing our land. In Jesus' name, amen. Amen.
Amen.
All right, guys. Stephen, Patty, once again, thank you. And thank you all for tuning in today. We appreciate it. And we will see you back here 3:00 sharp tomorrow for Fun Friday. All right. Have a great day, everybody. Bye-bye.
Bye.